Well, we originally did this production with the Pagosa Springs Center for the Arts back in October, and we then proceeded to do a Kickstarter campaign to make sure that we could raise the additional funds necessary to get it up here to Boulder so that we could share some of the work that's been created in Pagosa up here in Boulder and Denver area.
So, Melissa Furlett, you directed this particular piece, and the whole theme starts with madness and the balance of good versus evil and innocence. And what is it about it that really grabbed your attention as a piece that you wanted to explore as a director?
Two things that really grabbed my attention was the fact that the play, everyone is necessary that's involved. Every designer really has a strong voice in helping to make the story come across. Besides Craig being the only actor on stage, it really is a two-person play between him and the stage manager. And he plays about 11 different characters, so to help him mine that was really exciting for me, along with it's like 11 different characters in an Irish dialect on top of it. So to figure out where everything lays and the physicality to go with that. And I'm very attracted that Thomas McGill has built this world where he wants you, the audience, to see him in a certain light. And there comes a time where he can't keep up his own persona that he's built. So everything comes crashing down. And that's very fascinating to me. I also am really attracted to this Groundhog's Day, this playing over and these reel to reels and how much time this man has taken to tell this story.
The narrative that you're describing of somebody describing, then re-describing and re-describing is almost the creative process of putting a production on the stage.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, it's a beast of a play, and every time having time away from it, it's interesting that we've come back and it has grown. You know, it's had its own breath, and that's really exciting to see. And when we've been going through tech this week, Craig's like, "Wait, you're changing these things," and I was like, "But our connection to it is changing, and our understanding of Thomas keeps growing and growing and growing."
And so, what you were describing earlier is what the audience experiences is Thomas on stage recounting this entire story again and again and again, portraying various characters within his life to the audience. There's also the voice of several people, including Olympia Dukakis as well.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Oh, well, I had been in communication with her to do a master class for our acting department at Rutgers University, where we got our Master of Fine Arts. And unfortunately, that fell through, but I still had the contact. And when we were daydreaming about who we would love to play the role of Mammy, because it's the larger voiceover role in the entire show, we're like, well, why not Olympia Dukakis? So contacted her, wrote her a note. She wrote back and was like, send me the script. So we did. And then she got back to us and was like, I'm in. Let's do it. Set up the studio time.
Now, in addition to her voice talent, you have many actors who are contributing their voice talents, including local actors that folks would recognize, including John Ashton, who does a lot of stuff here locally.
Absolutely.
Yep. And Ryan Wustewald.
Yes.
Recently, he's worked a lot here in the Denver area and just recently moved with his wife over to Astoria, Queens.
Yeah, by New York. And Tim Moore is a voiceover also in the piece. Yeah, but Olympia could not have been more generous. The day we worked with her, she was a delight. And it was such a... Immediately you understood why she's had the career she's had, because she doesn't take anything personal in the best possible way. She said, it's not about me, it's about what the script needs. And as a director, I almost fell over and rolled out and like hip hip parade. I mean, because it's just it's the most delightful thing to hear that you're actually collaborating to raise a story up, not about your ego or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Craig, this is like veritably a one-man show in which you're interacting with voices, but it really is you on stage. How do you manifest and maintain that interest and keep the audience focused on what you're doing and everything that you're trying to portray?
You know, I think it helps that Melissa has worked really hard with me to make it moment to moment, so that I'm constantly moving from idea to idea to image to image, and that is for me, they're like little footholds. And on top of that, I am just like blown away by the lights and the sound, which completely engulf me, and they give me so much life. And I think when I feel alive, I have faith that I'm keeping interest of the audience, hopefully.
Yes.
So let's talk a bit about the lights and the sound,
absolutely.
And what role do they have in keeping the energy going and keeping Craig working through the piece?
One of the things that's really great about this space that we've been able to make at the Dairy Center is that the entirety of the set is a giant warehouse, and as Thomas McGill moves through the warehouse, he relies on the mental world that he's created to tell his story. So what the lighting does is it recreates the world that he imagines as opposed to the world that he's actually in. So instead of just being in a warehouse for this entire play, we get to go outside, we get to go into his mother's house, we get to go into all these different locations. And the lighting utilizes color and shape and form and movement to try to keep the audience aware of the fact that, oh, now we're in a different location. Now we're in a cemetery, now we're in a cafe. And to help tell the story, to supplement Thomas's mm-hmm. actions.
So as a lighting designer, you get the chance not to portray the realism, but the surrealism. Mm.
Right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So people who do come to see the show will notice that there's a lot of color, vibrant color in this show, because I'd like to picture Thomas's world as being overflowing with his ideas and his passion. Yeah.
But when we talked previously about design, how everyone is so crucial, is that Enda Walsh also wrote in that sound happens here or music happens there, but he doesn't really give you any more information than that. So we collaborated with Matt Bittner, who's an incredible actor and sound designer that we've all worked with before. And he understands the world as an actor, and he also understands the world as a designer, right? So those two layers are very important with this script, because he can choose which to evoke. Is he evoking the world of the play, or is he evoking Thomas's opinion on the show? So the sound design is crucial, and it is ever changing. I mean, you can go from like a soft, moving, flowing air piece, you know, into a driving hard rhythm percussion, and it really does add a whole other layer to the world.
And it's something as simple as literally stepping into a cemetery and hearing a little bit of grass being blown and some crickets and birds, and suddenly atmosphere has happened instantaneously.
Yeah.
And we have changed. So lights and sound immediately change the location, and without those things, I mean, the audience would be lost. So they really are the other characters in the play.